Welcome, everybody, to episode 276 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, June 7, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp, John James Jacoby, from way up there in the Great White North.
It's
wait
it's
a minute. Am I still able to say that, or is that racist these days?
It's mostly green here now, and blue. The skies are blue. Everything's green.
All right, I'm covered.
Everything here is wonderful and beautiful right now. Hi,
awesome. Hey, man. Glad to be back with you for another episode of WordPress Weekly. Hey, man, we had quite the show last week. Really got in depth on some JavaScript stuff. And later on in the show, we'll give you a little bit more of an update on what's happening with the JavaScript framework debate. It turns out that the creator of Vue.js, Evan Yu, Sarah was able to nab an interview with him and publish it on the Tavern. He weighed in on the debates going on in the WordPress world, and we also got some news topics to cover. However, we have an epic guest on the show today. I believe first time on the show. His name's John Brown, and he's a full-time digital nomad traveling across the globe and running Nine Seeds, which is a WordPress development agency from wherever you can find decent Wi-Fi, and we'll get into that with him to see where he's found decent Wi-Fi. But John, man, thanks a lot for being on the show today. Oh, now I got two Johns, so I'm going to get confused. I might call you Mr. Brown.
That's my dad, as they say. Jeffro, thanks for the great intro, man. As they say, long-time listener, first-time caller. Awesome. I've been listening to you since I started with WordPress. More than 10 years ago now.
Holy moly. So you're definitely there in the talk show days.
Yeah.
So remember,
so live. So John was your one listener and your one follower on iTunes.
So he might have been the first. Who knows? So let's go back to 9 or 10 years ago. It's your first time on the show. So why don't you tell our listeners your WordPress origin story?
Oh, so it's a pretty classic one, actually. So I used to be a civil engineer. That's not the classic part, but I quit that and decided to travel. And in doing that, I started a blog. And that blog started on WordPress.com as a travel blog. I roamed around North America and then Asia for about a year and a half. And I came home and was like, well, I don't really want to go back to that engineering career as good as it was. I want to do something online. And I tried photography for a while. That didn't quite work out the way I wanted because selling photography is hard. And got back into code and programming and had a photography client who needed a WordPress website, knew I was at least familiar with WordPress, but at the time, literally only on WordPress.com, and built them a custom floating share bar as the first thing I ever built for someone in WordPress. And that turned into one client after another through a freelance career into joining Nine Seeds, eventually becoming sole owner of Nine Seeds. Now we do pretty big websites. Sell some plugins, sell some themes. We kind of a full service agency now.
You said something there I want to highlight there. I think is sort of fascinating. And maybe it's not just tied to WordPress, but so you end up with the client because he's familiar. He knows that you're familiar with WordPress. But then because of the good work you do with that client, that turns into referrals. You start getting other clients. And next thing you know, you've got a development agency. That seems kind of fascinating to me. And do you think in today's day and age, I mean, this is 9 or 10 years ago, but today, do you think that same thing can sort of happen to somebody who may be looking to start getting into freelance or is somewhat knowledgeable with WordPress? They could start up their own dev agency?
Yeah, I really do.
Freelancing.
I really do. I don't think it's changed that much. I used to call it like doubling down in poker, right? Like you get your first client and you charge them cheap, and then you get your referral and you charge them double. And then you get the next referral and you charge them double. And then finally you're making a livable wage and reasonable professional rates. But I think that same pattern still applies today with people getting started. And I think that the key back then is the same thing today. And I mean, I mean, no disrespect to the younger people, but I was 30 something at the time competing with 20 somethings at the time who just frankly were flaky and unreliable for their clients. And it becomes a matter of, regardless of what your technical skills are, if you can run your business professionally, if you can engage with your clients in a professional professional way, they'll respond to you. That in the end is more important than the technical side. Now that said, I'm pretty technical, like John here. I love the code, but at the end of the day, like if you're trying to do freelancing, running the business side and the client communication being reliable and on time and responsive becomes really important. And everybody can do that.
Yeah, I can't do
that.
Yeah, I've watched
37 years old, still struggling being on time and all of those things. So
I've watched presentations at WordCamps from Jennifer Bourne from Bourne Creative.
She's amazing.
A very good WordPress development agency, about what goes into establishing the client relationship and defining the scope and all the things that go into some of these larger client projects. And there's a lot to it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't manage expectations up front and deal with the costs and keep scope in line and document all the communication that's taking place between the two, you know, if you don't do all that and keep your ducks in a row, things could turn into a mess pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. There are people doing professional level work, and it always resonates with clients. It's funny you mentioned Jennifer Bourne, though, because I was just looking at her website this morning, because I always, whenever I need to rework our contact form for lead sales, I always look at hers and go, well, what is she doing? What can I riff from her? Because she really just rocks it in terms of funneling lead intake and management. Amazing.
So tell us a little bit about Nine Seeds. It's a WordPress development agency. Who's involved with that, and how did that get started?
So Nine Seeds started about 8.5 years ago, I think now. John Hawkins, who is really well known in the community, obviously, founded it with two business partners who then very shortly thereafter left to go do their own things. And then that's about when I came in, and a couple years later became part owner of it. And eventually John went off to run to try his hand at some other things. That didn't work out. Now he's landed back at web dev, doing biz dev over there. But that's kind of the origin story of Nine Seeds. We've always been very developer-y focused. We've always done custom development for hire, has always been our bread and butter. And so for years ago, that was a lot of PSD to theme development work. Now it's a lot of customized plugin work, complicated custom migrations, things that are like from Joomla or ASP.NET to WordPress, things like that. Like things that require some code special handling. We don't do, I just openly admit, we don't do Fortune 500 enterprise scale stuff. That's left to, you know, the crowd favorites and the 10-ups and the VIP partner people and that kind of stuff. But we've got a couple plugins we've sold for years, low volumes, just kind of hobby stuff. Plugins in the repo, themes. But that's it. Like we've always been embedded in DNA to the point where, Jeff, as you know, I was the lead organizer of WordCamp Maui a couple years ago.
An event I wish I could have attended.
So many.
So does my wife. And my wife keeps asking me, is there going to be a WordCamp in Hawaii? I go, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not there anymore to run it. I always tell everybody, I'm like, look, I left the community there with clear instructions. As soon as they can get a lead organizer to run it, I'm there to help them with everything. So I do hope they do another one. They talk about it every once in a while a little bit, but it's certainly the question I get asked as I travel around the world. When's the next WordCamp Maui? But the upshot of that was with Nine Seeds, Robert Gilmer, who works for us, is now lead organizer of Vegas. John has organized Vegas for years. You know, we've been involved in Orange County. I'm co-organizing WordCamp Orange County this weekend with Steve Zengit and crew. Obviously, Brandon, Jeff, and those guys are involved. So Nine Seeds has been involved in the WordPress community pretty deeply for a really long time, especially on the community side, organizing, running meetups, organizing, running WordCamps, coast to coast. So,
is the agency run 100% remote?
Yeah, we're all remote employees. I am the only traveling nomad. Everybody else just works from home or cafes where they live. And I kind of, for the last 5 years, I've bounced in and out of being full-time nomad status. As you know, I was living in Hawaii for a while. But it's always been a career that I've made and held to being location independent. And so Nine Seeds has always held that as well, that we don't really care where you are in the world as long as you get work done.
I don't have any interest or desire, at least enough to get on the plane to go outside of this country. But I know that there's so many cool places and things in this world to experience. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the show, because you know, there are some people who embrace this remote work lifestyle, like really embrace it, and they work from anywhere and they take advantage of it. And then there's some people like me who, you know, at times I look at this remote work thing and I go, well, what's the point? What's the big deal? I work mostly from home. Sometimes I work next to the train tracks, which actually is at the point where I feel like, yeah, okay, this remote thing is pretty cool. But you've been able to travel all around the world. How do you manage to stay productive and get things done no matter where you're at in the world?
Well, I think it does start with, it has to fit your personality, right? And I love it. I love being new places. I love figuring out new cities. I tell people all the time, one of my favorite things is just to see how a city wakes up. It's different all over the world. Like how Munich wakes up is different than how Tokyo wakes up. And I mean, from newspapers getting delivered to beer getting delivered to whatever happens in the morning of the city. But I love those things. And some people don't. They like a comfortable, predictable environment. So it does fall back to your personality. I don't think everybody should be a nomad. Everybody doesn't need to travel the world. Once upon a time, I thought it was, you know, mandatory that everybody go travel. But I get it. I know people who are very happy, lead completely fulfilling lives without it. As far as being productive though, I think that's a little bit individual, but I'll tell you what I found. I don't go anywhere for less than 5 days if I plan on getting work done. And the simple reason is that when I land somewhere new, I know that one day is going to be gobbled up by kind of getting settled into wherever I'm staying. Usually that's an Airbnb, occasionally it's a hotel, not as often, or whatnot. But regardless, one day is kind of lost to travel. Then I need a day to find somewhere comfortable to work. And that might be a cafe, it might be a hotel lobby, it might be a co-working space. But there's always effort involved in that, because as much as research you can do ahead of time, you get to a cafe and find out their Wi-Fi is crap. Or you find out that the co-working space you were planning to go to requires 3 bus transfers or a $50 Uber ride. Like, these things happen, and I never rely on that first day in a new place to be fully productive. And then you have a full productive day, day 3. And then day 4, you start thinking about leaving if you're only there for 5 days, right? And then 5, you're traveling again. So I kind of have this 5-day rule. If I'm going somewhere less than 5 days, I don't really anticipate being productive there. Now, I know nomads who literally pop around every week to a new place and they're getting their work done. I think it has a little bit to do with what they do. Those are still mostly WordPress web developer folk. But the 5-day thing works for me. And my wife and I now tend to plan on 1 month at a time. That's what we like doing. So as you know, we talked before, I'm going to WordCamp Europe next week. See John there. Woohoo.
Woohoo.
We'll be there for 2 weeks, and then we go to Spain for a month. And that's just kind of what we do, is we book an Airbnb in Spain for 1 month. We plan on being in one house, one place for a month. Gives us plenty of time to settle in, get to know the local businesses, the restaurants, the lay of the land. And then what we do is we take a weekend or two during that month, and we take a weekend trip somewhere. So we will actually be in Ronda, Spain, which is in southern Spain. It is this magical little village up on a plateau with this bridge that's like 600 feet tall connecting two plateaus. It's unbelievably majestic, right? It's the kind of place where most people go for the weekend on their holiday. And we've found that's one of the really special kinds of places we like to go for longer periods, because those are the places where when you show your face 3 times at the same restaurant, it clicks that you're there for a while, and you tend to be pretty easily get to know the locals. Right. Not deep relationships with locals, but you get to know people a little bit better than you would, you know, your average barista kind of thing. And then after that, we'll plan another month somewhere, probably in Portugal.
And I want to stress the fact that this, you're not talking about vacations here. You're talking about trips that are tied in with work. And as you're getting work done, you also, the way you schedule things, you put in time in your schedule to be able to enjoy your surroundings while you're at that location.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's always hard talking to people who don't have a frame of reference. So it's a really important one to recognize. We work Monday through Friday. I often tell people, I'm like, the only thing different is we get to eat in Paris every night for 2 weeks. Other than that, we work 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. Because I do run a business. I do put in 40 plus hour weeks. And so it's important like to go somewhere long enough that you can also do like a weekend side trip. So, mm-hmm. you know, Monday through Friday, we enjoy the city. We do what any local would do. Sometimes stay home, sometimes go out. But with 2 weeks in Paris, it's not like I spend 14 days going to museums, because 10 of those are filled up with kind of working from home or working from wherever I am.
So Fox, this originally showed up on the Wall Street Journal, but they recently published an article called Why Remote Work Can't Be Stopped. And I couldn't view it because I wasn't a member. So I just Googled the headline and found a different site that has the same content, which turns out to be Fox Business News, who's just acting like a regurgitator. But and by the way, Wall Street Journal, you can add them to the list who gets it wrong by saying Automattic is the maker of WordPress, which is a pet peeve of mine. As someone who covers issues within the WordPress community. However, near the end, I thought this was interesting. I bring this up to you to see if I can get your thoughts. But Dell's Mr. Price, he's one of the people involved with the remote work policy at Dell. And he says, you have to be committed to this digital transformation and be ready to invest to do this well. Otherwise, you have a lot of moral issues, engagement issues, and a bad cultural response. And Jason Fried, co-founder and chief executive of Basecamp, says that everybody on a team, remote or not, has to be willing to participate in the process or else someone will miss out on key information and decisions. And just that quote, I thought, reminded me of Triple J's experience with being at Automattic when, you know, if he missed a P2 or if he wasn't on for an hour, mm-hmm. if he wasn't there connected all the time, it felt lost. You know, you could easily right. not know what's going on within that organization.
The bigger that companies get, I think, is the harder that it gets. So it doesn't surprise me when you end up with companies like Yahoo that over the course of several years decide to try and pull things back. I think Dell, somebody else is pulling people back too, right? Like their remote workers are pulling them back in. And
maybe HP.
Somebody, yeah. And I have a friend of mine that even worked remotely for the Long Now Foundation for a long time. And if you're the only remote worker, I think can be pretty tough because the demands on you to be available and to be ready to go at pretty much a moment's notice are, I think, a lot higher because you are the anomaly. I think that you sort of end up needing to overcompensate because you're the only one, unless you have a culture or surroundings or coworkers that make a very active point in including you in things all the time or looping you into things because you're not physically there when everybody else is. So, a company of like Nine Seeds that's been around for a while and been doing this for a long time, clearly it works for you guys, right? It's this is part of the culture that you have and even being friends for a long time. John Hawkins obviously is awesome and I think it's a little bit easier there. But for me at Automattic, eventually as the company grew and being on the .org team that was a little bit partitioned from the rest of everyone else that was working on WordPress.com, it was sometimes the FOMO was real for me. So it was hard to play catch up and not to focus on getting stuff done and feeding the FOMO and traveling and everything else. It was just a lot to juggle. So it's not always for everybody. I think I found my stride in different ways and other things. But John, it sounds like you're like a natural at this. Like you get the working remotely and doing support and doing the development work and somehow traveling and appeasing your partner and having a good time and everything. I mean,
sometimes like you, John works so remotely he can't work.
I think, you know, partners is an interesting thing. My wife is fully on board with it, and that's great. She wasn't when we first started dating. We found a happy medium that works for us both, but she loves it too. But yeah, for nine seeds, it does work. And I've never seen a hybrid people in office and remote work situation. I haven't seen that firsthand. We've always been all remote, much like Automatic was always all remote. And I think that kind of works and makes sense because everybody's kind of the same level, right? Like, you know, you have to engage. And what you were saying was about making sure to include those people. I often view it from the opposite side, right? Like, as a remote worker, you have to actively engage. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't be a passive remote worker the way you can be a passive cubicle dweller. Right. It becomes a different thing. And you have to take responsibility for your own, you know, personal and professional development. You have to take responsibility for becoming engaged and active and knowing what's going on and not waiting to respond to things. So much of that just naturally ties in with some of your more modern, you know, management practices, Agile and other things where you have people actively taking work rather than just waiting for it to come to them. It kind of works out. I think it's the future. I used to be more read up and paying attention to people like Jason Fried and Tony Say from Zappos and others about remote work culture and kind of flexible holacracy, all that kind of stuff. Honestly, what I found, you know, 8 years in at Nine Seeds, we're small. The scale that they talk about doesn't directly apply to us that much. And the last couple of years have been rougher industry wide. So some of it's just kind of more heads down, keep things going well.
Yeah, the article I'm referencing places a heavy emphasis on having the right tools and sometimes even having to create the right tools so everybody can stay on top of things. What tools do you use? I mean, Slack is probably an obvious given.
Yeah. We used to joke all of them because we just change every month. Like John and I, Hawkins and I used to joke, like, we should just go into business as professional beta testers for project management tools because we went through so many of them from like Asana to Trello to Basecamp to Red Booth to Team Booth, back to Asana, back to like, so right now our stack is Slack, obviously. Lots of Hangouts, although we're now using a peer in for video conferencing. And then Asana for project management, although we're using Trello, playing with Trello for product management and Asana for services management, because most of our business is service, client service work. But those are the main ones. I'm now using Harvest for time tracking and invoicing on top of QuickBooks for bookkeeping. That's kind of the stack. It's pretty common to everybody. We've looked at a lot of others. None of them quite fit right. So.
Triple J, I know that Automatic, when you were working at Automatic, they used to do a town hall and there was video used in that. And I know that video was used at least sporadically within inside the company. But even this year, it seems like since the company has grown so large and teams are there, that video conference calls between teams seems to be taking or having more of a priority or is getting used a lot more through Zoom with an Automatic just to keep people, I think, maybe to have that face-to-face interaction that you would typically have if you're in an office. Video kind of helps bridge that gap. You could see emotions, you could see reactions and things like that, but video seems to be taking on more of a role there at Automatic.
I think it has to. I think Automatic's schedule of doing team meetups, you know, three or four times a year is, for bigger companies, I feel like it's not that unusual. But if you're a smaller group where you can't afford to make four worldwide trips a year to be in the same place, then video has to be the next best step. And I don't know that the software matters real heavily. Zoom has been pretty good, like, as far as connectivity and quality and all those things. But between trying to, you know, use Skype and every other tool to try and do video calls, I mean, we've definitely seen Hangouts and everything else. They're all kind of the same, and they've all historically been equally as terrible as the previous. And but Zoom so far, I think, has done them well. And even Slack comes baked in with the ability to do video and stuff now. And so I think it becomes more important because you really do need that human element. And it can't just all be written communication. It can't all just be audio on a hangout. You do need to see people's faces to understand and hear them and see them to get body language and nuance and cadence and understand where someone's coming from is just really, really important. And coming from someone myself who is like frequently misunderstood in my writing style when it comes to communicating, because I'm usually pretty lengthy. I usually have a lot of detail when I write. I usually assume people are going to read what it is that I'm writing, and that's not always the case. And so in general, a call or a video call where people can see you, it seals the deal. It makes it so much easier to communicate your point and move on to the next thing. That does not surprise me that Automattic would start using more video for more things. I think they still do monthly town halls, and they even for a while, they have so many sub teams now that they will do town halls with their, like I think Andrew Spittle, I think is still the happiness lead. And so he'll do a town hall just for happiness folks. And the VIP, I think it's 45 people now. So it wouldn't surprise me that you might do, you know, the mega one with Matt, but every other group or subgroup will inevitably have their own just to stay on point too. So I think it's a good thing.
I'm to echo the thing that I think is most important in there is face-to-face via video is really important. I've been saying this for a really long time is that with remote workers, it's fine to use Slack. It's fine to use audio only. But there is something about seeing another human's face that creates bonding and familiarity and connectedness that I think is really, really important. We do three stand-up calls a week. They're scheduled for 15 minutes. And sometimes, you know, people have to have cameras off because whatever. But I really do encourage everyone to always do those with their video on because I do think it's really important to see each other's face, their behaviors, their mannerisms, because it helps breed connectivity regardless of the actual context and what's being said. Mm-hmm. Seeing humans' faces is really important. I will say that the flip side of that I love about text-based communication, like John, I tend to write in a lot of detail, sometimes painfully so. But
No, I haven't read any of your comments on the Make blogs.
Sometimes he's on the chavern, like, wait, I've got a 5-paragraph comment. It must be John Brown. infrequent but long. Anyway, the thing about the video is documentation. We love hopping on short hangouts and stuff, but one of the things we do struggle with is having written takeaways. We had played with, speaking of tools, we played with a product a few years ago called Do.com. Do.com was a thing, then it went under. Somebody bought the name, made it another thing, it went under, and now they're making it a third thing. So if you go look for Do.com, it won't be the thing we use. But it was like a meeting agenda or a call agenda maker and note taker. So it was kind of a real time, like you could do a call agenda. We're going to talk about these 5 points and then outline it in real time, kind of sketch in your call notes and then send that to everybody on the call. And we loved it. Other than that, it didn't integrate that great with Hangouts and calendaring. It kind of became another thing that you had to have open. But structurally, we really liked having that tool. We've never found a great replacement for it other than opening up Google Docs while we have Hangouts.
So taking the emphasis on sort of like what they do with the core meetings in Slack, where somebody kind of compiles everything together, puts them in a post, and kind of for archiving later and saying, yeah, we talked about this at this point, at this time, and this is what we came up with. Sort of like a textual base is a lot easier to archive and remember versus a video.
Yeah, I mean, the concept of meeting minutes is not a new one, right? That's been in business since the beginning of time. It's just, I think in tech, we have often forgotten to do that step.
Well, let me tell you, the part I dislike doing the most about this show is the show notes. So I'll just vouch for that. The whole meeting notes thing. So
I get it.
I like just doing the show, but when it comes to compiling, well, this is what we talked about. It drives me nuts.
Yes, that's because you sort of have to listen to yourself. You forget what you talked about because you're so engaged with the podcast and talking to people, and the show notes require you to go back and like listen to the entire conversation. It's just easier to have the conversation and not take notes while you're doing it. I don't know.
So I forget the name of the service, but my friend Kareem over at Crowd Favorite was saying that they use a service that transcribes their calls.
That's a great idea.
And it's like, I don't know if it's a few cents or a dollar a minute or something. I think it's a dollar or two a minute. But like after their calls, they get a full transcript of it with each speaker's said this, like a screenplay, right? Like just fully transcribed, which I love. And I looked at it, I think it was one of those things where I went, well, we're a little bit too small to afford that right now, but it does sound cool.
So I wouldn't consider Matt Mullenweg a nomadic traveler. However, he's definitely a traveler. He's put in his share of miles in a tube to go across the world. And he does this thing where he posts what's in his bag maybe once a year.
I love that.
He just recently posted that. Do you publish something similar? And if not, what's in your bag? Do you have a fidget spinner?
I don't have a fidget spinner yet. I may next week. Hint, hint. I don't have a fidget spinner. I have done a couple posts over the years on wanderingjohn.com of kind of what I'm traveling with, what's in my bag. I don't do it as well as Matt. I look at Matt and I'm like, damn, that's just amazing, man. I got to do that.
Every item in his bag has a specific purpose.
Yeah, it evolves a little bit, but similar to Matt, like it's got to have value and purpose to be carried. Mm-hmm. I did a talk at WordCamp Orange County a couple years ago on remote work. And at the end, I was like, and by the way, these are some of the tools that I use. And the crowd went crazy. They're like, why didn't you just do an entire WordCamp talk on your gear? And I'm like, I should do that next time. And so next time I took half of a talk to basically talk about the gear I carry. A lot of it's the usual stuff. It's the headphones I like, which are noise canceling, but they're earbuds, not over the ears. Matt is a sound audiophile guy. JTrip, I believe you are too.
A little bit.
Me, I like being able to block out the background noise, so I have a pair of earbuds that have active noise canceling is one of my favorite things. The thing that nobody talks about, I carry a portable travel router that's battery-powered Wi-Fi, so I can use that as a repeater wherever I am, because quite often in whatever room I'm in, the Wi-Fi is crap, but like outside the front door, it's good. So I found that thing priceless everywhere I go. But those are that's the tech stuff that isn't pretty bread and butter for everybody these days.
I used to carry with me an Apple Airport Express, pick them up for $100 because I don't know that it's super common anymore, but a lot of hotels, 5 years ago would charge you per device. And so or plugging into the Ethernet would potentially even just be free. So if you plug your Airport Express into the Ethernet, then you suddenly don't pay for your wireless devices. Plus you get your own Wi-Fi.
Oh,
that was my travel hack. But I don't know that really is as relevant anymore. I'm not sure.
It's not as relevant, but I still run into that sometimes. And that's one of the reasons I use my own Wi-Fi router in those situations, but yeah. It'll repeat. You don't just have to plug it in the way you did with an Airport Express. It'll repeat Wi-Fi signals. The other nice thing is these days when I travel with my wife, we both have laptops, we both have iPhones, we both have iPads. That's six devices that you have to type in passwords on to get onto somebody's Wi-Fi. With my own little repeater, it's just once. And then all the devices connected to that repeater have access.
There's a cool iOS 11 feature that lets you hop the password over to your other new Mac OS and iOS 11 devices. So you only type it once, and then if they're like within the same vicinity of one another, you can just say like, oh, this just get the password from this other iPhone or get it from this other iPad. So maybe you can not even pack the router eventually, and you'll just be able to never have to type those passwords or only type it in one time.
I look forward to that. Yeah. It's like AirDrop for passwords. Yeah. I used to have a, I used to always keep my phones jailbroken, my iPhones jailbroken. Huh. And I had an app that would show you your passwords, which I found really helpful because you'd type them in and then a week later be like, I don't remember what that was.
Right.
So you could always get
with all the places you've worked remotely, what software do you use to secure your data that's in the air? Do you use a specific VPN?
Yeah, I use getcloak.com.
I use the same one.
I've used Cloak for 4 or 5 years now, I think. It is seamless, awesome. It is one of those things where, like, it ranks up there as, like, most awesome tech software that I would buy again in a heartbeat with one password. It's nice. Just, it's always been super reliable. It's on my Mac, it's on my iPhone, it's on my iPad. I don't use it on known secure networks because why add latency? But when I'm traveling and everywhere else, I'm always on that VPN.
Yeah, that's one of the when I get the email and I see the receipt that I've been charged $5 a month for, I'm like, hey, I don't care. Fine. You know, and anytime I want to work remotely, it just kicks in automatically and I don't have to, I don't even have to think about it. It's pretty nice.
That is one of, there's only like two or three pieces of recurring billing software that I use. That I every time I get the bill for it, I'm like, that's really too cheap. They should be charging me more. That is one of them. But I'm gonna give a shout out to the other one because it's a agency management tool. So we found this service called Tatsu, T-A-T-S-U, and what it does is it integrates with Slack and runs a question answer standup in Slack channels. So every single morning, all of our devs get a "What did you do yesterday?" What'd you get done? Then what are you planning on doing today? And do you have any blockers? Those three questions every day. And it automates it all. And it's something like $1 per user per month, which is just crazy cheap. Every time they bill me, I just go.
So two questions here before we wrap it up when we get into the news. And the first is, what advice would you have to maybe potential listeners out there who may be thinking about taking a break or maybe participating in this digital nomad lifestyle? Like what advice would you give me if I wanted to start hopping freight trains and still get, you know, write posts for the tavern as I'm illegally traveling across the US or somewhere?
In my imagination, Jeff, when you say you're working from like the train station, that's exactly what you're doing. Just hopping on a train with like a stick and like a bag of beans and clothes and a campfire.
Yes, and a sock with a lock in it, you know, as my weapon.
Full on Jack Kerouac vagabond style, right?
Yes. Just,
it's funny, I meet those people. So I'll say this. I participate in a lot of digital nomad online forums and stuff, Facebook and Nomad List, Nomad Forums, all those. And there's so many people starting out. And I think one of the things that I would not have done was to quit my job and start traveling and then trying to figure out how to make a living as I went.
Oh, a lot of people do that.
A lot of people do it that way. And it's very romantic to be like, I quit my job and I jumped on a train. I established myself professionally being location independent while I still had a location to live. I was living in Southern California and I just actively pursued building a business that my clients didn't know where I was and didn't care where I was. I was just online. But I had that already going before I hopped on a plane or hopped in my car and drove cross country. And I say that because I meet people who are, you know, already in Thailand, hanging out in Chiang Mai with all the other nomads going, how do I get started making a living online? And I'm like, well, you got all the time in the world to do it here and you're living somewhere cheap, but it's going to be a lot harder to start building up those first clients and that business from where you are than it would be to run it from where you are once it's established. So I guess by all means, like think about it and do it, but don't necessarily think that the best way is jumping off the cliff and or jumping the pool kind of thing. So get started. Just build a business that's location independent without it being you traveling at the same time. Once you get the business running where your location doesn't matter, then start traveling. You know?
I think that's good advice. I think like the one thing for me that was helpful was like making home or making, you know, your nomadic place, like just mentally needs to be a place where you can actually work. Like if what you're doing is going all in on this, remote work, small, independent, freelancer, agency lifestyle, then, you literally have an unlimited number of options of things that you can focus on or try to do. And you can't do any of those things. You need to do one. And one of those things needs to help you make money so that it's a sustainable lifestyle. And once you have a sustainable lifestyle, then you can start looking at the other number of unlimited things that you want to try and do. And until you're comfortable with that, or until you have a whale client that helps you find sustainability pretty quickly and then focus on the other supplemental types of things, it's really, really challenging to not veer off in other good ideas and directions and buy a bunch of domain names to try and have a bunch of side projects and SaaS offerings and things that are all great ideas that you will just never focus on. So it's doubling down on something that helps generate revenue is the hardest, but also the most obvious thing that needs to happen, I think.
And the last question I have for you, John, is what are some of your favorite locations that you've worked from that you've, yeah, you're working, but you've also been able to feel zen. Like it just, you're in the moment. It feels great. And it's like, you've made all the right choices in the world.
So I have what I call my absolute favorite place on earth that I've ever worked from. And it's actually at a little cafe restaurant on an island off the coast of Thailand called Koh Phanong, at a little restaurant called Bamboo Hut. And if you're at Bamboo Hut, as of a couple of years ago, you could get a little bit of cell phone tethering internet, as long as you were high enough up on the rocks and the ridge to like get over the neighboring ridge. But these are beaches called Had Tien, Had Yuan, Had Wai Non. And you can only get there by boat. There's actually now a dirt road through the jungle, but let's pretend 5 years ago, you could only get to these beaches by boat. And I would sit there drinking, mango smoothies, eating pumpkin Thai curry, looking at turquoise blue waters, and just wishing that my internet was faster than 1 megabit per second. But that was when I was like, this is it. This is my place. Like, it is outdoors, shaded, exquisite, good food, good people. There's a couple of like yoga retreats out there and that kind of thing. So that's one of the places for sure.
And maybe briefly tell us about your experience. And I saw photos of this and here's John topless having a good time. He's working in the cabin of someone's boat on the water somewhere.
So this was this is a great story, Jeffrey. I'll try to make it quick because I know we need to get to news. I had been hoping for years that WordCamp Bangkok would happen. I've been kind of trying to support that community for a long time from some people I knew who lived there full time. And it finally came into being this year, and I made a plan to go over to Thailand for a month. A week over in Thailand, my mother, 73-year-old mother, although I'm not supposed to say that, I trust her friends don't listen to this show, called me up and said, hey, I just got a last-minute deal on a catamaran cruise out of Phuket, Thailand for a week. Do you want to join me? And it was one of those right time, right place. Sure, let's do it. Worst possible time for me to be on a boat running 9 Seeds because I was just hiring a new project manager. But bought 2 cell phone, like tethering cell phones, so I could have Wi-Fi hotspot on the boat. But basically spent 3-4 hours a day online, tethered to some cell phone tower across the ocean. 3-4 hours a day out of Wi-Fi coverage or cell phone coverage, and just snorkeling and swimming and living on a boat. It had always been a dream of mine to be a digital nomad on a boat. I will say I've done it. I will say it was not the most productive 10 days of my life, but it was pretty magical.
And that's just awesome to hear somebody having that type of experience. And, it's possible for anyone to do.
Yeah, it was an amazing trip. It was also my mother's birthday trip, so it was really special on all levels. So.
Excellent. So unless we have, I'll say J trip, you know, to distinguish between the Johns here. Any last questions here before we get into the news? I'd like John to comment on some of the news, so we'll keep him around.
No, not at all. I think you always do a fantastic job, Jeff, with questions. So I have nothing more to add.
All right, then let's get into the news, shall we? We got a couple things to talk about. First story is the open sourcing mental illness foundation has surpassed its $50,000 fundraising goal. So OSMI, which stands for Open Source and Mental Illness, it's a nonprofit organization that raises mental health awareness in the tech community, and was founded by Ed Finkler, also known as Funkatron, on Twitter. In fact, about two or three weeks ago, we actually had Ed and Bridget Willard on the show to raise awareness and talk about the issue of mental health. So he was asking for $50,000. So far, he's gained $58,000. In fact, he's also got some companies that have some corporate sponsors, including KDC, GitHub, DigitalOcean, and Laravel. And KDC has designated $1,000 a month for 12 months to support Finkler's salary, which is awesome because on that show where we had Ed on, that's the first time he made the announcement that he was going to step back. He was going to step down from his job, and he was going to do OSMI full time. So it's awesome that a company has stepped forward and offered to pay his salary so he could focus on spending the money on raising awareness, creating more resources, and all the stuff that OSMI does is free. So congratulations to Ed on successfully reaching his fundraising goal. And you know, it's really cool to see so many tech companies and corporations and just a lot of people in the WordPress community in general. I mean, within the past 2 years, there's really been this focus on raising awareness of mental health and trying to raise the stigma that's associated with talking about it.
Yep. And Ed's really comfortable sharing and connecting people and getting people in contact with one another. And they have an awesome community. I'm just really happy to see that he's gotten this to a point where it's got momentum, it's got traction, and it always looks and feels really good when you've got organizations and companies and stuff that are committing to helping you out. So, if for anyone that's listening that wants to check it out or learn more or even talk to Ed and figure out a way to help him out, is osmihelp.org.
Right, and the episode I'm referencing is 273 of WordPress Weekly. If you want to listen to Ed talk about mental health and what he's doing with OSMI. And quickly, I wanted to let everybody know that WordCamp Europe is about a week away. I think it's next week, actually. WordCamp will be live streaming all the sessions again this year to make the event accessible to those who can't travel to Paris, like me. And that's by choice. But if you sign up, if you go to the tickets page, they have a live stream ticket available, which is for free, and they have 2,675 remaining, so they got plenty. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about them being sold out. But I highly encourage people who want to. This is their WordCamp US. This is a big time, probably the first or second, depending on how you want to look at it, major WordPress conference of the year. I believe Om Malik will be interviewing Matt Mullewig on stage again, so that'll be something great to tune into. And just a lot of the sessions that's going to take place there are going to be pretty epic. So if you get the chance, visit, the link will be in the show notes, but visit the WordCamp Europe website, check out the tickets page, and sign up to get a link for the free live stream. And I tuned in, I think it was last year I tuned in, Brian Krausgaard was doing an interview with Matt on stage. And while I'm eating my eggs Benedict at home on the patio, I'm watching, you know, stuff go down in Europe on the live stream. It was pretty nice.
I think by the numbers, WordCamp Europe was bigger than WordCamp US.
Yes.
So I think that year over year, an event over event, that there may be a friendly competition happening to see
little rivalry.
Yeah, gets the most attendees or the most speakers or I don't know. It's fun to watch happen.
Well, the other day I actually watched the WordCamp US State of the Word again, and Matt brought this up, and he talks about meetups and WordCamps in Europe and how Europe beat out the US. But you know, he jokingly said, because he does this in his presentations, that you know, we've got to beat them. You know, WordCamp Europe can't have the crown every year, so you know, there's a little competition in there for you, and I like that about Matt.
I think the timing is interesting too, between when WordCamp US is in December and Europe is in the summer months now, where it is sort of every 6 months is, you know, someone trying to take a crown back. So even if it doesn't really matter, I think it's fun. I think it's neat to watch it gain momentum and get bigger and have more attendees and more popular. I think it's cool.
All right, so we'll talk about this next story. We'll talk a little bit about, and I'll get both John's thoughts here on this. But Sarah Gooding was able to interview Evan Yu, who is the creator of Vue.js, the Vue.js framework, and he weighed in on some things, on some debate, some topics, some issues going around about whether WordPress Core should choose Vue or React. I think smartly, he did not weigh in on one side or the other in terms of the decision. What he did is he answered some questions and concerns raised about the Vue.js framework, especially about the longevity and the track record. And Yu was quoted as saying that Vue has been around for almost 4 years and all the work has been done in public on GitHub. So anyone could go and check the maintenance history. And he also said, while it has been largely developed by him, you know, one-man show, the current maintenance is a lot more community-driven. They have more active core team members triaging most of the issues, and a larger percentage of the issues are fixed by community pull requests. And I actually found out that he receives $10,000 a month from recurring Patreon donations that fund his full-time efforts working on Vue. So, hey, that sounds to me like it's a good-paying gig, you know, to work on that JavaScript framework. Mm-hmm. And he answers a lot of other questions as well, which you can take a look at on WP Tavern, which received a lot of good praise and compliments. And John, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the article or check out his responses. He also left a comment on the debate on the Make Core WordPress site. But your thoughts?
Mine? What's John?
Oh yeah, well, Mr. Brown, your thoughts here.
I mean, I gave a whole bunch of thoughts on last week's episode, so this is all you.
It's still my turn. I follow it intently because, you know, running an agency, I would be curious what framework gets adopted because it affects all of the plugins that we will build. Because it will be the framework that we use for plugin development and theme development, for that matter, too. Not on the front end, but on the back end, at least. And so it's interesting. I think it's a good discussion. It worries me a little bit that it's a foregone conclusion that it will be React. If that's what it is, I'm fine with it. But I'm happy they are at least somewhat having that discussion, and it's a very civil, reasonable discussion going on. I know personally, not being a JavaScripty front-end developer, when I look at the documentation for React, I get very lost in JSX. Whereas in Vue, I read the documentation and it makes pretty clear sense to me how the templating works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a valid argument about barrier to entry there. But at the end of the day, I'm 60-40 on the topic. I just want one of them adopted sooner rather than later, and not it to become kind of yet another 3-year discussion before any progress gets made forward. I think those are the things that hurt WordPress more than anything, is just decision paralysis on things like this. So
right,
and the discussion is gonna keep going over the next several weeks. In fact, contributors are going to talk about it at the community summit, which will take place along with WordCamp Europe next week. So there's definitely going to be some talk about JavaScript there.
Well, and historically, if you think of like WordPress multi-site, you think of BuddyPress or BBPress, Andy Peeling, you go back in the day with Sam or anybody else. WordPress has a legacy of supporting what appears to be a one-man show, even though they're not. Multi-site had lots of contributors. BuddyPress had lots of contributors. BBPress had lots of dedicated contributors, but they all had a person that was the head of those projects. And so I can relate a lot to Evan trying to take a stance of not really trying to push his agenda or his project or his the thing that he enjoys working on as much as wanting to make sure that he's, you know, WordPress picks the right piece of software to solve the problems that it's trying to solve. That's been my message with the BBs for a really long time is if you're going to use them, I want you to enjoy using them, and they should be the thing that solves the problem that you're trying to solve. If they're not, you're going to have a bad time and you're going to blame the software for it. And I don't want that to happen. So I thought that Evan really that answered all of the questions in a really in a way that had a lot of integrity. And to me, that means a lot. So it's the post on the Tavern, gosh, has dozens of comments. Are there 25 comments now? I'm sure you've probably got a few in moderation, because I know sometimes it takes you a little while to pull mine out of moderation, but I'm not trying to be upset about that or anything. It's great. Oh, it's cool.
Yeah. I thought Evan's response was really brilliant as well. It was, it had a lot of integrity, as you put it. And it was heartening to see. And I agree. I don't think the bus factor, the one person framework, is a big concern.
I agree.
GPL, it's open source. Any new maintainer could take it over if needed. That doesn't scare me. And as he puts it, they squash their commits, and there's more people committing to Vue than it looks like.
Do you have any issues with Facebook's patent troll protection clause within the license for React? Because this seems to be a big issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, I get where it comes from, and I kind of looked at it as it's just patent troll protection, and the odds of anybody suing anybody else in the WordPress community because of it is so negligible as to be pointless. But having built a couple of WordPress-based projects that then got sold to third parties, they had tremendous issue just with GPL. Mm-hmm. The act of burdening WordPress even more with more kind of licensing terms worries me from that perspective. Not the perspective that there would actually be a lawsuit, but for those of us that build bespoke custom functionality and things that aren't public and aren't distributed and aren't attached to all of that, then there are contract negotiations that go on where they look at these things and adding that Facebook patent troll protection to the project does worry me a little bit.
That is for sure a problem that I have experienced and know that others have as well. So, and it's a legitimate concern that at least within our ecosystem and people's careers and jobs and paying the bills are on the line on when it comes to some of those things. So I think that it's hard to make that a priority or like the primary decision why you the primary reason why you make a decision like this. But at the same time, it's tough to not consider that pretty deeply. I mean, I looked into the patent, not amendment. There's a different word for it. I looked into pretty deeply, like what the verbiage is, what the wording is, what the intent of it was and what the history of it was. And my conclusion is that it is not really ever going to be a problem in reality, but it may be a problem for people to accept. It will be hard for organizations to look at what that is and says and feel comfortable enough with it to implicitly be okay with it. Whereas Vue's MIT license makes it a non-issue at all. So if it's hard to think of the jobs that might not happen or the work that might not ever get done simply because some one document exists that might hang something up. So that's tough.
All right. So no decision has been made, but when one happens, WP Tavern will have it first. Maybe, unless it's on the core blog. We'll see.
I love that there's competition in the WordPress news space these days. It makes it a lot more fun.
There is? No, I'm just kidding. So moving on here. WP Forms has acquired the WP Mail SMTP plugin. So WP Forms was founded by Syed Balki, pretty much a friend of the show. He does WPBeginner.com, List 25. He acquired the free WP Mail SMTP plugin from WordPress plugin developer Callum McDonald. And Mail SMTP had more than 6,000 active installs and actually solved a problem that's pretty frequent with forum plugins where emails would get – contact form submissions would be labeled as spam or get caught up in these aggressive filters. And sort of this Callum or McDonald's plugin sort of solved this. And Balki picked up the plugin. He's going to work on it some more, going to put in some more improvements. And since obviously this is one of the things, being a forums plugin, it's one of the things that his customers are having issues with the most. So hopefully this sort of purchase will address one of his most common issues that his customers experience. And he ended up acquiring the plugin for five figures because it didn't generate any revenue, but who knows what those five figures are, but that seems like a good deal. And McDonald, he wasn't able to put in the time or to monetize the plugin because he didn't have the time to put in the WordPress community, and it would have involved a lot of work. And since, you know, he really wasn't at that point to invest that time into it, selling it was the best option for him. So a lot of people are excited to hear that the plugin will continue, that improvements will be made, and WP Forms and probably other forums plugins are going to benefit from it because apparently Google and Yahoo and some of these other email companies are really starting to have aggressive filters that's causing all these different form submissions to not get where they need to go. And I don't know if John or the other John, Mr. Brown, if you guys have experienced issues with contact form submissions or just form submissions in general being caught up in spam filters or whatever else.
I haven't had any problems other than the pretty typical ones of like me not configuring my terrible email server correctly. Other than that, I haven't experienced any of those problems, but I'm not deep into that space, so I'm not the best audience for that. Most of the time when people email me, it sits in my inbox for far too long, and then you're better off sending me a text message or pinging me on Slack. So, it's not my forte.
Well, you know, in automatic, they don't do email. They do P2, so maybe you just need a P2, or O2, I should say.
An O2, right. I need A personal O2 where people can contact me through my own.
The site. Only way to get in touch with me now is via my personal O2. Please log in. Like those people. Right.
You know what? I'm willing to try it. I'll give it a try. We'll see how it goes.
So, congrats on the acquisition. Go ahead, Brown.
I was just going to say, so WP Mail SMTP has always been great. Syed's team is fantastic. Jared and Thomas, Jared Atkinson, Thomas Griffin. Great. I'm super happy to see that plugin go over to their hands. I have always felt like that was the second best SMTP mail plugin. And I think it's because it kind of suffered a little bit, even though it's most popular. There's a guy named Jason Hendricks who made Postman SMTP. And for me, the killer feature of that was always that it did outgoing email logging, like email leaving your server to an SMTP server, which we find super helpful in debugging stuff. So WP Mail SMTP is fantastic, and I look forward to seeing more development on it from Syed and his team, for sure. But we do see problems with email and deliverability and stuff, and having one of those helps tremendously when we're setting up remote SMTP or Amazon SES or all the other things we do. So.
So cool VersionPress, pretty cool plugin, has launched VersionPress.com, which will actually fund the open source project. So it's a little bit like the WordPress.com self-hosted WordPress model. So the founders of VersionPress have launched a service, and VersionPress.com is the best of what VersionPress offers, paired with features like staging sites, backups, things you would find on most of your other managed WordPress hosts. And it's actually built on Amazon Web Services infrastructure, so AWS. Websites who host on it are going to be running PHP 7 or Nginx, HTTP 2, and at least two Docker instances that autoscale based on load. And the issue with VersionPress, and for those who don't know, VersionPress is this cool. It uses Git. It provides full version control. I call it the undo button of WordPress. So you're able to undo a change and put the database back into a state that it once was without having to export and import MySQL, which is a huge pain, and there are issues involved with that that could totally screw up the content within the database. So it's pretty cool. So what they're going to do is they're hopefully the funding and the revenue they generate from the service side of things will be funneled into the open source VersionPress project. And one of the reasons, or actually there's two reasons why they cite that they've created the service, and that is supporting WordPress plugins and establishing partnerships with hosts. Apparently, hosts have to have Git installed, obviously, because Git is what's pretty much powers the version control behind the scenes. And there's this thing called ProcOpen, which I believe is something related with PHP, but it's used to interact with Git. And most hosts do not allow this for security reasons, or either have older versions of Git installed, which creates incompatibility. So Bork Bernard, co-founder of VersionPress, says that over time it became clear that we needed our own environment to run VersionPress in. So if you check out VersionPress.com, it officially doesn't open to the public until July, so that's next month. But if you pre-order now, you can get a substantial discount on it. And it has cool workflows, the staging environment, merging changes between staging and production is, as you would guess, amazing, because you know that's what VersionPress is all about. And there's also, you can also, kind of like Flywheel, you can assign billing to a developer, an agency, or client account. There are tools on there to collaborate with within the account. So just a heads up there. So if you're a fan of VersionPress, version control, and you don't want to mess with or contact your host and ask them, hey, do you got Git installed or any of this, or you don't want to mess with the plugin, now you can just host your site on VersionPress.com and don't worry about it. So it'll be interesting to see how the service establishes itself, because the managed WordPress hosting space is pretty much well established. Some would say it's a bit crowded. We'll have to see how it compares to the competition. But nice to see the VersionPress guys continue on with this and their service. And I hope that it generates considerable amount of revenue to put towards the VersionPress project.
It's a neat project. Like it's they've really focused on an audience of like more than your average user. It's almost like a tool built for us, right? Like if we want a place to back our things up to and have everything in version control and have a managed copy of your entire WordPress installation and have it be, all of the value that Git provides is that it can be distributed if it needs to be. It doesn't just need to be versionpress.com. It could eventually really be your own backup if you wanted to have your own server that is configured to allow for it. And it's a niche sort of tool that integrates well with WP Admin. It looks the way that you would expect for it to look. It does exactly what it's supposed to do, but it's such a narrow target audience that I think it'll be an uphill battle, but it is an extremely cool piece of software. So,
well, talk about a difficult problem to solve. So I mentioned plugins, right? Mm-hmm. So WordPress plugins can and usually alter a site's database. And one of the toughest, most difficult problems that they're making progress on trying to solve is building in support for the 40,000 plus plugins that exist in the repo, where VersionPress needs to understand plugin data, action, short codes, and other things to automatically provide version control for them. So they're creating these things called schemas, for the different plugins. And they're working on some of the most popular plugins out there right now, and they're building in schemas. And in fact, at the competition, there's a plugin, I think, called MergeBot, and they're also working on these schemas for individual plugins. And, you know, and Bork has written about this before, this particular issue, but when I think about it, having to support all those plugins and make sure that you could restore to a state that you were before the plugin was there because you know exactly what the plugin did, seems mind-numbing to me. But these guys are pretty smart, and they're working on it.
Yeah, I wish them the best. It's going to be a lot of work, but it's when they're done or when they're when they're in a place where they feel like they're have momentum and generating revenue and kicking butt, then I think we'll probably see a lot of really, really cool stuff happen.
That's something I don't know if it'll ever happen. I think it's possible on some of the managed WordPress hosting accounts, but. No, we always talk about the issue with automatic updates in WordPress, and you have to back up first, or what happens if you turn them on and they break a site. But it would be cool if there was an undo button where you just click undo. Okay, you go back and you try and figure out what happened, and you don't have to mess with this exporting and importing of databases or backup files. You know, you could just undo, and it's that easy. And it's a difficult problem to solve, but boy, it. It just seems like it'd be a great user-facing feature if you just undo stuff.
I think VaultPress had something for a little while. I don't know how VaultPress works anymore. It's been a long time since I used it, but you used to be able to roll stuff back with VaultPress. And I know from looking at Pantheon's user dashboard for launching sites that their interface for like test and dev and production or the live environment has a pretty slick interface for copying data between environments and renaming subdomains and domains and switching from HTTP to HTTPS between URLs for everything. So they have pretty sophisticated tools there, but nothing that gets us to the point where the VersionPress folks are trying to do, where they really want to be able to maintain a versionable WordPress and database integration where, I sort of feel like they're really attacking the problem of like activating or updating a plugin and having it white screen and then users being helpless. Like this is the sort of solution to that. Like if you're helpless and white screened and you want to instantly revert back to something, unless you know what to do, unless you know how to get into a terminal, unless you know how to get into your SFTP program and delete the plugin and then try again, I don't know that that's really all that easy for your average user. So they're trying to solve that problem in a very developer-y way, I think.
Mr. Brown, your thoughts on VersionPress as a project or a plugin and what the problems are they're aiming to solve, and maybe even some of your thoughts on the idea of full version control in WordPress to the masses.
I love what they're doing. I haven't used it directly. It sounds like John has, but I think that it's one of those things that there's so many different ways and none of them are great for version controlling WordPress sites. Like we obviously use Git like everybody, and it's great for code, but there's never been a good database solution. And you're right. Delicious Brains and those guys are working on MergeBot. Mm-hmm. Crowd Favorite ages ago did Ramp. Yep. There's a few others that are doing kind of, or WP Site Sync. I think Dave Jesch and ServerPress were working on. So there's lots of people trying to crack this. It's one of those things where I know philosophically I'll get shouted down, but I wish WordPress Core handled this stuff because I think that what John's talking about is exactly right. Like it's the risk of what happens when you white screen your site, and it shouldn't fall back to a plugin to revert a failed update. Mm-hmm. Updates, if an update fails, WordPress should be able to handle it gracefully. And it doesn't always, right? Because PHP fails and then the whole thing falls down. It's a house of cards kind of thing. I don't know if, Jeffro, you saw there's a track ticket on WordPress or PHP versions and plugins. that Yust Devok just reopened an old place.
I saw that yesterday, as a matter of fact.
But I really do wish that Core would embrace more of these things.
Which is actually a four-year-old issue.
Oh, yeah.
Only four?
Did I mention how I wish WordPress would make decisions and move forward? I think VersionPress is awesome. I love that they're launching their own hosting. I think that's a great way to do it. I know that for us, WP Engine's always been a great example of doing it right in terms of kind of continuous backups via Git. We're working with a bunch of other hosts too, and I don't see anything quite as good as what they've been doing, but I'll give versionpress.com a try. Certainly sign up for that killer startup deal. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't even get me started on the white screen of death. You know, I there's a particular website I work on where if I'm updating plugins and I do anything else or I interrupt that process, I get the white screen, which is just a maintenance file turns on. I get the white screen. I have to log in. Actually, I don't have the FTP information, so I have to log in through the host control panel. They have a file manager. I have to remove that white file, the maintenance file for the white screen. You know, to the average user, you get the white screen and that's it. You're done. Full stop. You have no idea what happened. You usually have no idea what's wrong and you have no idea how to fix it. And the white screen of death of WordPress is still a giant pain in the ass for so many people out there. And it provides the user no help on solving the problem.
It's a tough situation with PHP and how it all executes and works. And plugins do a decent job, or Core does a decent job of sandboxing plugins when you activate them or reactivate them, but you can't plan for everything. So,
right.
And even Core Minor updates do a outstanding job of auto updating on installs where that's available and enabled, but you can't plan for every scenario, even though you've tried really hard to do so.
Whew, I'm glad you said it, Jay.
I don't need to be too quick.
Go ahead, Mr. Brown.
Oh, I was just saying, I hope I didn't come off too critical.
No. If anything, I came off critical.
I've looked at like GitLab and Mattermost and other installables that are not PHP and different technologies and a different stack and a different installation process. And they're a different community and different types of projects, and so they're able to make decisions about things maybe more quickly or maybe differently or anything else. But most of them do have some built-in interface for what does backing up mean, like where does it go, what does it do, it built into the platform itself, or at least a semblance of like don't forget to do this. Whereas WordPress generally is pretty white labeled even by itself in terms of what a backup solution is or should be or look like. And I think that that's probably on purpose to let it be a thing that's handed off to plugins or solution providers or something else. But I don't disagree that it's a common issue and problem that it would be. I mean, my gears are turning and what that would look like in WordPress Core to recommend or have, something under tools and backups and then something that lets you easily just rsync or copy some database tables over or something really primitive and easy that would be of a basic fundamental first version of that every server would probably provide or have the tools available. If you've got MySQL, you've got PHP, then other than server timeouts and out of memory issues trying to figure that stuff out, what's the lowest common denominator for a backup?
Well, unbeknownst to me, I found out that a lot of managed WordPress hosts actually, when it comes to automatic updates, they'll take a snapshot of the site and then they'll perform the update and they'll do another snapshot of the site. And if they notice that there's a white screen of death, whatever else, I don't know if it reports the error, but it won't let you update the site. That way you don't encounter that white screen of death where at that point you're helpless.
So let's if we look at the way that
that's a services-based
It's pretty crazy. It is pretty crazy. But if you look at like 3D rendering, for years and years and years, it took lots and lots of computers, lots and lots of time to render all of Toy Story 3, right? Like it took months to render out a 2-hour movie. And now we're at a point where computers are just augmented VR, real time, no problem, looks amazing, looks like reality. How far are we from every time you do a WordPress core update, it runs PHP unit, the unit tests run, the update comes through, all the tests pass, integration tests pass, everything's good to go, and the site pops up. Like processing wise, are we 10 years from that? Maybe, but is that a thing that we eventually move towards? That we're, instead of installing a packaged, bundled, compiled version of WordPress, that we just ship it with all of the tests and let the server handle and run all the tests and make sure that everything passes. I mean, we can really do crazy, crazy things if it's a thing that we think that provides users the ultimate value.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part, right? Is that so much of this is server level below mm-hmm. PHP, right? Once PHP fails, how do you fix that? What Jeff was saying was, yeah, WP Engine does a good job of like snapshotting it, and if something fails, it rolls back. Mm-hmm. Liquid Web even goes a step further. They do like a visual diff of the front end of your site.
That's cool.
Which is cool if, well, it's cool if you have a static visual front end. But sure. If you have ads showing or you have a Twitter widget that's changing, like it detects that as changes. So there's some buggy stuff there. Still, it's pretty cool what it will do to how hosts are inventing in managing updates so that things right. don't break or change unexpectedly. But going back to what you were saying, John, I think if WordPress had a backup button and then that backup button was extensible, mm-hmm. that would be a good solution, right? Like, okay, this is the default backup. And if you instead want to backup to S3 or to wherever, right. that's an extension that's handled by the plugin space. It's going back to kind of auto updates are just amazing. Talk about something people were afraid of for a long time that mm-hmm. has proven to just be super good and super reliable. I don't know the internal workings of that, but why can't that same internal workings we use for plugin updates?
I think that's they do share a lot of code, but I agree that the experience there still is wrinkly a little bit.
But I like when those experiences get standardized. That's the hardest thing for me. Like mm-hmm. seeing hundreds of sites, I see so many users struggle with the fact that this plugin put it in the settings menu, this plugin put it into the top level menu. I don't know where to find it. Why is this UI look different than that UI? It's so funny. Like I was just having a conversation with a good friend of mine who, to give you an idea of his technical chops, is a meditation coach and author. and he set up a WordPress site and he's struggling. And I'm just like,
yeah,
I wish it wasn't. But what he expects is a front end editor, just point and click at things and they work. Right. And we've gotten so far from that. But it's that user that needs to have a standardized interface and reliability.
WP Admin and top level menus, even with BuddyPress and BBPress, we go back and forth a lot where BBPress introduces the traditional post types, forum topics, replies. That's what you get. But the common complaint is that it takes up too much real estate, that they would rather just have one top level BBPress menu. That sort of goes against the object model that WP Admin's menus have. But then you look at things like WooCommerce and Easy Digital Downloads and Give WP, they all have one menu and everything is underneath them. And that seems to work really well as a user experience. And so sometimes what the standard is, isn't what users prefer. So it's tough.
Well, I think that's a good point, but I think that what it is we've been around a long time. 10 years ago, adding a single custom post type to the top level menu item was easy for users to grok.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, the expectation is front-end editing on everything.
Well,
and even with like BBPress, I think the answer should be, why should anybody have to go find it in a WP admin?
Right.
Everything that you want to do in BBPress, for the most part, new posts, commenting, moderation, all of that,
mm-hmm.
ought to be handled from the front end anyway.
Yep.
And I think that's just where the space has to go.
I agree. All right. So with that, this is the point of the show where we do our picks of the week. And Mr. Brown, I'll give you a chance to think of a cool website, service, tool, plugin that you think would be great for a lot of other people to know about. And my pick this week is generatewp.com. And this is a cool site that has a collection of tools that generates code for short codes, post types, meta boxes, taxonomies, term meta, and post statuses. And in fact, they recently did a couple of updates because of the REST API endpoints that were introduced in 4.7. So all of the generator code that's there is very well written, compliant with WordPress, meets the WordPress coding standards, and is updated to account for the fact of WordPress 7. So if you're looking to maybe look for a shortcut to generate metabox code or taxonomies, check out generatewp.com. And that's my tip. And J-Trip, what do you got for us this week?
So in typical me fashion, I waited until today, which worked out in my favor, actually, because my pick for today was released today by Scott Bollinger. Is a pretty sweet plugin called Hollerbox, which is the reason I'm picking it is because I have wanted something like this for a really long time and have not wanted to build it myself. And so it gives you a little pop-up in the bottom right-hand corner of your website that is used as a funnel for getting email addresses, and is all extensible and pluggable, and you can update your own little avatar and chat bubbles, and it mocks a little chat conversation and says that you're not there and enter your email address and I'll contact you back. And it's kind of super awesome and a very simple design and implementation. And so you can learn more about Hollerbox at hollerwp.com, and it's already available on the plugin repo at wordpress.org/plugins/holler-box. Pretty cool.
Let me hear you holler. All right, I gotta stop there with the jokes. Yeah. All right. Mr. Brown, do you have a pick for us by chance?
Oh, so I have a couple of go-to picks, and I mentioned one of them earlier, which is that Postman SMTP plugin because it does the logging. So I'm going to get super geeky on you with one that I tell all of my fellow WordPress developers about. You guys remember the company interconnected.it that makes the MySQL search and replace script that everybody uses?
Yes, by David Coveney, right?
Yes. So they also have a plugin called WP Performance Profiler, and it basically profiles your PHP code in the dashboard, giving you number of calls and time and SQL execution. It gives you way deeper data than, say, P3, the old plugin performance profiler that GoDaddy sponsored.
Yeah, that's the one I was just thinking of.
It's deeper, better info than that. It's really amazing. It's an MU plugin. It definitely requires some developer-y knowledge to use, but it's awesome. But I will give it the asterisk of a caution. It doesn't work with PHP 7, sadly. Because of a change in PHP 7 and how ticks are reported and used, it changes how it works. So check out wpperformanceprofiler.interconnected.com. Jeff will put a note in the call notes, I'm sure. But it is, it's really awesome. I love it. So if you're doing performance optimization on sites, it's a great way to find out that some hook or some function is taking 5 seconds to execute, to track down a little bit more than your images are too big.
And performance profiler looks like it's a pretty polluted space. Like there's a plugin in .org that is not this plugin that is called performance profiler. So do not settle for anything other than this one, it sounds like.
Yeah, and this one is not in .org because it is a MU plugin, and they charge a ridiculously high, I think, $6 for the plugin. Which I am 100% sure is one of those cases. We just don't want to support anyone for free.
Yeah.
Give us $1 at least, and we'll give you the plugin.
But I use WordPress. I'm entitled to that code for free. With priority support.
But it has been one of my go-to tools for profiling performance on servers where you can't install something like New Relic or any of these debug profilers, because it's pretty safe to run on your live site. Just don't leave it running on your live site. It does have a performance hit. But it's an awesome, awesome tool.
All right, well, great pick. I'll be sure to add that to the show notes. And that's going to do it for this edition of WordPress Weekly. Before we wrap it up here, Mr. Brown, how can people get in touch with you if they have any questions about the digital nomad lifestyle or just want to follow your travels? You know, where's John?
Yeah.
Even though we have wanderingjohn.com. Tell people how they can get a hold of you or follow you.
Okay, so best thing to get a hold of me randomly is Twitter, JB510. But we actually have two websites now, wanderingjohn.com, which is me, and my wife and I do one called johnandelena.com, which is our travels as a couple. So it focuses on where we're going, what we're doing, and a lot more of the nomad lifestyle, especially for people who are not single 20-somethings, but are 30, 40-something married people or couples. It's a little bit different take on travel. So check that out.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And Triple J, sir. How could people stalk you?
Find me at JJJ on Twitter and GitHub, jjj.blog if you want to see mostly pictures of my dog and me ranting about WordPress stuff. And any of my plugins anywhere on GitHub or on WordPress.org or BuddyPress.org or BBPress.org. I could go on and on and on and on.
Hey, if Paul has a rant on WordPress, I'm reading it. Let me tell you.
It would mostly just be him running around in circles and chasing his squeaky toys. And I mean, it's all cute, but it's not very informative.
I'll stare at that GIF all day. So you can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffFR0. And until next week, have a safe, enjoyable rest of the weekend. Well, John, I don't know when you're leaving for Europe next week.
I don't know when I'm leaving either.
We'll see what happens. So it might be just me. It might be Triple J, but it might be me and Paul, me or somebody, doing the show next week. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody.
See you in Paris, John.
Bye. See you later.